You're listening to KHDX-FM, Conway, Arkansas. This is the Ouroboros Diner, and I'm your DJ slash meal companion, Drew. I hope you've enjoyed your meal so far. Next up is another fantastic song, I'll Be Around by Yola Tango. This is just a sweet, pretty song. I can't make out much from the lyrics.
Thank you.
That was I'll Be Around by Yo La Tango. Next up, Be Your Own 3 a.m. by Adult Mom.
I take my shoes off, crawled into bed, thought I had nothing left. And I got his number in January. It was so freezing, I am ruined, best when I am cold. In my life I too.
That was Be Your Own 3 a.m. by Adult Mom. This next song, it's one of my favorites. I absolutely adore this one. It's In Fact by Gregory and the Hawk. That was In Fact by Gregory and the Hawk. Step 1, light me on fire. Step 2, walk clean away. I won't burn long, and evidence of your done wrong will be gone in seconds, I swear. It's just so sweet and short, and it really just gets right to the point. And you can feel it. You can feel the emotion that it has behind it. Anyway, next up, First Love / Late Spring by Mitski.
Oh,
That was First Love / Late Spring by Mitski. Wild women don't get the blues, but I find that lately I've been crying like a tall child. Next up is another Mitski song, because you can never really just have one Mitski, can you? This one is Last Words of a Shooting Star. I can hardly get on an airplane without listening to it, which... I always have, like, a few airplane-related songs in my head. It's this one and Airport Terminal by Bill Wirtz. But anyway, right now we're just listening to Last Words of a Shooting Star by Mitski. That was Last Words of a Shooting Star by Mitski. You wouldn't leave till we loved in the morning. You'd learned from movies how love ought to be. And you'd say you love me and look in my eyes. But I know through mine you were looking in yours. You are listening to KHTX-FM, Conway, Arkansas. This is the Ouroboros Steiner, and I'm your DJ / meal companion, Drew. We're listening to breakup songs today, but we're coming to the end of the list, unfortunately. And from there, we're going to read some more Inimitable Jeeves, because I can't get enough. Next up, Girl Afraid by The Smiths.
Thank you. intentions lie? Or does he even have any? She said he never really looks at me. I give him every opportunity.
That was Girl Afraid by the Smiths. Girl Afraid, where do his intentions lay, or does he even have any? Boy Afraid, prudence never pays, and everything she wants costs money. And our, well, not our last song for the day, but our last song for this playlist specifically, Sweet Soul Dream by World Party.
Raise me up, take me up, let me know the heart.
That was Sweet Soul Dream by World Party. What won't we do for love? All right, it's time for chapter 4 of The Inimitable Jeeves. Speaking of love that's going super duper well, Aunt Agatha has invited poor Birdie to Roville and is now trying to get him engaged to this girl whose name I can't at the moment remember. He's not a big fan of the idea. Hemingways is the family name. Okay, this is chapter 4 of The Inimitable Jeeves. Pearls means tears. I remember, it must have been when I was at school, because I don't go in for that sort of thing very largely nowadays, reading a poem or something about something or other in which there was a line which went, if I've got it rightly, shades of the prison house begin to close upon the growing boy. Well, what I'm driving at is that during the next 2 weeks, that's exactly how it was with me. I mean to say, I could hear the wedding bells chiming faintly in the distance and getting louder and louder every day, and how the deuce to slide out of it was more than I could think. Jeeves, no doubt, could have dug up a dozen brainy schemes in a couple of minutes, but he was still aloof and chilly, and I couldn't bring myself to ask him point blank. I mean, he could see easily enough that the young master was in a bad way, and if that wasn't enough to make him overlook the fact that I was still gleaming brightly about the waistband, well, what it amounted to was that the old feudal spirit was dead in the blighter's bosom, and there was nothing to be done about it. It really was rummy the way the Hemingway family had taken to me. I wouldn't have said offhand that there was anything particularly fascinating about me. In fact, most people look on me as rather a fool. But there was no getting away from the fact that I went like a breeze with this girl and her brother. They didn't seem happy if they were away from me. I couldn't move a step, dash it, without one of them popping out from somewhere and freezing on. In fact, I'd got into the habit now of retiring to my room when I wanted to take it easy for a bit. I had managed to get a rather decent suite on the third floor, looking down onto the promenade. I had gone to earth in my suite one evening, and for the first time that day was feeling that life wasn't so bad right after all. Right through the day, from lunchtime, I'd had the Hemingway girl on my hands, Aunt Agatha having chewed us off together immediately after the midday meal. The result was, as I looked down the lighted promenade and saw all the people popping happily about on their way to dinner and the casino and whatnot, a kind of wistful feeling came over me. I couldn't help thinking how dashed happy I could have contrived to be in this place if only Aunt Agatha and the other blisters had been elsewhere. I heaved a sigh, and at that moment there was a knock at the door. "Someone at the door, Jeeves," I said.
"Yes, sir."
He opened the door, and in popped Aileen Hemingway and her brother, the last person I had expected. I really had thought that I could be alone for a minute in my own room. "Oh, hello," I said. "Oh, Mr. Wooster," said the girl in a gasping sort of way. "I don't know how to begin." Then I noticed that she appeared considerably rattled, and as for the brother, he looked like a sheep with a secret sorrow. This made me sit up a bit and take notice. I'd supposed that this was just a social call, but apparently something had happened to give them a jolt, though I couldn't see why they should come to me about it. "Is anything up?" I said. "Poor Sidney. It was my fault. I ought never to have let him go there alone," said the girl, dashed agitated. At this point, the brother, who after shedding a floppy overcoat and parking his hat on the chair had been standing by, wrapped in the silence, gave a little cough, like a sheep caught in the mist on a mountaintop. "The fact is, Mr. Wooster," he said, "a sad, most deplorable thing has occurred. This afternoon, while you were so kindly escorting my sister, I found the time hang a little heavy upon my hands, and I was tempted to, gamble at the casino." I looked at the man in a kindlier spirit than I had been able to up to the date. This evidence that he had sporting blood in his veins made him seem more human, I'm bound to say. If only I'd known earlier that he went in for that sort of thing, I felt that we might have had a better time together. "Oh," I said, "did you click?" He sighed heavily. "If you mean was I successful, I must answer in the negative. I rashly persisted in the view that the color red, having appeared no fewer than 7 times in succession, must inevitably at no distant date, give place to black. I was in error. I lost my little all, Mr. Wooster. Tough luck, I said. I left the casino, proceeded to the Chappie, and returned to the hotel. There I encountered one of my parishioners, a Colonel Musgrave, who chanced to be holiday-making over here. I induced him to cash me a check for £100 on my little account in my London bank. Well, that was all to the good, what? I said, hoping to induce the poor fish to look on the bright side. I mean, bit of luck finding someone to slip it into first, crack it out of the box. On the contrary, Mr. Wooster, it did but make matters worse. I burned with shame as I make the confession, but I immediately went back to the casino and lost the entire sum, this time under the mistaken supposition that the color black was, as I believe the expression is, due for a run. I say, I said, you are having a night out. And, concluded the Chappie, the most lamentable feature of the whole affair is that I have no funds in the bank to meet the check when presented. I'm free to confess that, though I realized by this time that all this was leading up to a touch and that my ear was shortly going to be bitten in no uncertain manner, my heart warms to the poor prune. Indeed, I gazed at him with no little interest and admiration. Never before had I encountered a curate so genuinely all to the mustard. Little as he might look like one of the lads of the village, he certainly appeared to be the real Tabasco, and I wished he had shown me this side of his character before. Colonel Musgrave, he went on, gulping somewhat, is not a man who would be likely to overlook the matter. He is a hard man. He will expose me to my vicar. My vicar is a hard man. In short, Mr. Wooster, if Colonel Musgrave presents that check, I shall be ruined. And he leaves for England tonight. The girl, who had been standing by, biting her handkerchief and gurgling at intervals, while the brother got the above off his chest, now started in once more. "Mr. Wooster," she cried, won't you help us? Oh, do say you will. We must have the money to get back the check from Colonel Musgrave before 9 o'clock. He leaves on the 9:20. I was at my wit's end what to do when I remembered how kind you had always been. Mr. Wooster, will you lend Sidney the money and take these as security? And before I knew what she was doing, she had dived into her bag, produced a case, and opened it. My pearls, she said. I don't know what they are worth. They were a present for my poor father. Now, alas, no more, chipped in the brother. But I know they must be worth ever so much more than the amount we want. Dashed embarrassing. Made me feel like a pawnbroker. More than a touch of popping the watch about the whole business. No, I say, really, I protested. There's no need of any security, you know, or any rot of that kind. Only too glad to let you have the money. I've got it on me, as a matter of fact. Rather luckily drew some this morning. And I fished it out and pushed it across. The brother shook his head. Mr. Wooster, he said, we appreciate your generosity, your beautiful, heartening confidence in us, but we cannot permit this. What Sidney means, said the girl, is that you really don't know anything about us when you come to think of it. You mustn't risk lending all this money without security at all to two people who, after all, are almost strangers. If I hadn't thought that you would be quite businesslike about this, I would never have dared to come to you.
The idea of pledging the pearls at the local Monte di Pietà was, you will readily understand, repugnant to us, said the brother.
If you will just give me a receipt, as a matter of form. Oh, righto. I wrote out the receipt and handed it over, feeling more or less like a fool. Here you are, I said. The girl took the piece of paper, shoved it in her bag, grabbed the money, and slipped it to Brother Sidney, and then, before I knew what was happening, she had darted at me, kissed me, and led it from the room. I'm bound to say the thing rattled me. So dashed sudden and unexpected. I mean, a girl like that. Always been quiet and demure and whatnot. By no means the sort of female you'd have expected to go about the place kissing fellows. Through a sort of mist, I could see that Jeeves had appeared from the background and was helping the brother on with his coat. And I remember wondering idly how the dickens a man could bring himself to wear a coat like that, it being more like a sack than anything else. Then the brother came up to me and grasped my hand.
I cannot thank you sufficiently, Mr. Wooster.
Oh, not at all.
You have saved my good name. Good name in man or woman, dear my lord, he said, massaging the fin with some fervor, is the immediate jewel of their souls. Who steals my purse steals trash. 'Twas mine, 'tis his, and has been slave to thousands. But he that filches for me my good name robs me of that which enriches not him and makes me poor indeed. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Good night, Mr. Wooster.
Good night, old thing, I said. I blinked at Jeeves as the door shut. Rather a sad affair, Jeeves, I said.
Yes, sir.
Lucky I happen to have all that money handy.
Well, yes, sir.
You speak as though you didn't think much of it.
It is not my place to criticize your actions, sir, but I will venture to say that I think you behaved a little rashly.
What, lending that money?
Yes, sir. These fashionable French watering places are notoriously infested by dishonest characters.
This was a bit too thick. Now look here, Jeeves, I said. I can stand a lot, but when it comes to your casting asp, whatever the word is, on the bird and the holy orders...
Perhaps I am over-suspicious, sir, but I have seen a great deal of these resorts. When I was in the employment of Lord Frederick Ranelagh, shortly before I entered your service, his lordship was very neatly swindled by a criminal known, I believe, by the sobriquet of Soapy Sid, who scraped acquaintance with us in Monte Carlo with the assistance of a female accomplice. I have never forgotten the circumstances.
And we now take a short break to say, you're listening to KHDX-FM, Conway, Arkansas. This is the Ouroboros Diner. I am your DJ / meal companion, Drew, and we are reading Chapter 4 of The Inimitable Jeeves. I don't wish to butt in on your reminiscences, Jeeves, I said, coldly, but you're talking through your hat. How can there have been anything fishy about this business? They've left me the pearls, haven't they? Very well, then, think before you speak. You had better be tooling down to the desk now and having these things shoved into the hotel safe. I picked up the case and opened it. Oh, great Scott! The bally thing was empty. Oh, my lord, I said, staring. Don't tell me there's been dirty work at the crossroads after all.
Precisely, sir. It was in exactly the same manner that Lord Frederick was swindled on the occasion to which I have alluded. While his female accomplice was gratefully embracing his lordship, Soapy Sid substituted a duplicate case for the one containing the pearls and went off with the jewels, the money, and the receipt. On the strength of the receipt, he subsequently demanded from his lordship the return of the pearls, and his lordship, not being able to produce them, was obliged to pay a heavy sum in compensation. It is a simple but effective ruse.
I felt as if the bottom had dropped out of things with a jerk. Soapy Sid? Sid? Sidney? Brother Sidney? Why, by Jove, Jeeves! Do you think that parson was Soapy Sid?
Yes, sir.
But it seems so extraordinary. Why, his collar buttoned at the back. I mean, he would have deceived a bishop. Do you really think he was Soapy Sid?
Yes, sir. I recognized him directly he came into the room.
I stared at the blighter. You recognized him?
Yes, sir.
Then dash it all, I said, deeply moved. I think you might have told me.
I thought it would save disturbance and unpleasantness if I merely abstracted the case from the man's pocket as I assisted him with his coat, sir. Here it is.
He laid another case on the table beside the dud one, and, by Jove, you couldn't tell them apart. I opened it, and there were the good old pearls, as merry and bright as damn it, smiling up at me. I gazed feebly at the man. I was feeling a bit overwrought. Jeeves, I said, you're an absolute genius.
Yes, sir.
Relief was surging over me in great chunks now.
Thanks to Jeeves, I was not going to be called on to cough up several thousand quid.
It looks to me as though you had saved the old home. I mean, even a chappie endowed with the immortal rind of dear old Sid is hardly likely to have the nerve to come back and retrieve these little chaps.
I should imagine not, sir.
Well, then. Oh, I say, you don't think they are just paste or anything like that?
No, sir. These are genuine pearls and extremely valuable.
Well, then, dash it. I'm on velvet. Absolutely reclining on the good old plush. I may be down 100 quid, but I'm up a jolly good string of pearls. Am I right or wrong?
Hardly that, sir. I think that you will have to restore the pearls.
What? To Sid? Not while I have my physique.
No, sir. To their rightful owner.
But who is their rightful owner?
Mrs. Gregson, sir.
What? How do you know?
It was all over the hotel an hour ago that Mrs. Gregson's pearls had been abstracted. I was speaking to Mrs. Gregson's maid shortly before you came in, and she informed me that the manager of the hotel is now in Mrs. Gregson's suite.
And having a devil of a time, what?
So I should be disposed to imagine, sir.
The situation was beginning to unfold before me. I'll go and give them back to her, eh? It'll put me one up, what?
Precisely, sir. And, if I may make the suggestion, I think it might be judicious to stress the facts that they were stolen by...
Great Scott! By the dashed girl she was hounding on me to marry, by Jove!
Exactly, sir.
Jeeves, I said, this is going to be the biggest score off my jolly old relative that has ever occurred in the world's history.
It is not unlikely, sir.
Keep her quiet for a bit, what? Make her stop snootering me for a while.
It should have that effect, sir.
Golly, I said, bounding for the door. Long before I reached Aunt Agatha's lair, I could tell that the hunt was up. Divers chappies in hotel uniform, and not a few chambermaids of sorts, were hanging about in the corridor, and through the panels I could hear a mixed assortment of voices, with Aunt Agatha's topping the lot. I knocked, but no one took any notice, so I trickled in. Among those present, I noticed a chambermaid in hysterics, Aunt Agatha with her hair bristling, as the whiskered cove had looked like a bandit, the hotel manager fellow. "Oh, hello," I said. "Hello, hello, hello." Aunt Agatha shushed me away. No welcoming smile for Bertram. "Don't bother me now, Bertie," she snapped, looking at me as if I were more or less the last straw.
"Something up?"
"Yes, yes, yes. I've lost my pearls."
"Pearls, pearls, pearls?" I said. "No, really? Dashed annoying. Where did you see them last?"
What does it matter where I saw them last? They have been stolen.
Here Wilfred the Whisker King, who seemed to have been taking a rest between rounds, stepped into the ring again and began talking rapidly in French. Cut to the quick, he seemed. The chambermaid whooped in the corner.
Sure you looked everywhere, I said.
Of course I've looked everywhere.
Well, you know, I've often lost a collar stud, and...
Do try not to be so maddening, Bertie. I have enough to bear without your imbecilities.
Oh, be quiet, be quiet!
She shouted in that sort of voice used by sergeant majors and those who call the cattle home across the sands of Dee, and such was the magnetism of her forceful personality that Wilfred subsided as if he had run into the wall. The chambermaid continued to go strong.
I say, I said, I think there's something the matter with this girl. Isn't she crying or something? You may not have spotted it, but I'm rather quick at noticing things.
She stole my pearls. I'm convinced of it.
This started the whisker specialist off again, and in about a couple of minutes, Aunt Agatha had reached the frozen Grand Dame stage and was putting the last of the bandits through it in the voice she usually reserves for snubbing waiters in restaurants.
I tell you, my good man, for the 100th time.
I say, I said, don't want to interrupt you and all that sort of thing, but these aren't the little chaps by any chance, are they?
I pulled the pearls out of my pocket and held them up. These look like the pearls, what?
I don't know when I've had a more juicy moment. It was one of those occasions about which I shall prattle to my grandchildren, if I ever have any, which at the moment of going to press seems more or less of 100-to-1 shot. Aunt Agatha simply deflated before my eyes. It reminded me of when I once saw some chappies letting the gas out of a balloon.
Where? She gurgled.
I got them from your friend, Miss Hemingway. Even now she didn't get it.
From Miss Hemingway?
Miss Hemingway? But how did they come into her possession?
How? I said.
Because she jolly well stole them. Pinched them. Swiped them. Because that's how she makes her living, dash it. Palling up to unsuspicious people in hotels and stealing their jewelry. I don't know what her alias is, but her bally brother, the chap whose collar buttons at the back, is known in criminal circles as Soapy Sid.
She blinked. Miss Hemingway, a thief. I...
She stopped and looked feebly at me.
But how did you manage to recover the pearls, Bertie dear?
Never mind, I said crisply. I have my methods. I dug out my entire stock of manly courage, breathed a short prayer, and let her have it right in the thorax. I must say, Aunt Agatha, dash it all, I said severely. I think you have been infernally careless. There's a printed notice in every bedroom in this place, saying that there's a safe in the manager's office where jewelry and valuables ought to be placed, and you absolutely disregarded it. And what's the result? The first thief who came along simply walked into your room and pinched your pearls. And instead of admitting that it was all your fault, you started biting this poor man here in the gizzard. You've been very, very unjust to this poor man.
Yes, yes, moans the poor man.
And this unfortunate girl, what about her? Where does she get off? You've accused her of stealing the things on absolutely no evidence. I think she would be jolly well advised to bring an action for whatever it is, and soak you for substantial damages.
May we, c'est très fort,
shouted the bandit chief, backing me up like a good'un. As the chambermaid looked up inquiringly, as if the sun was breaking through the clouds.
I shall recompense her, said Aunt Agatha feebly.
If you take my tip, you jolly well will, and that eftsoons or right speedily. She's got a cast-iron case, and if I were her, I wouldn't take a penny under 20 quid. But what gives me the pip most is the way you've unjustly abused this poor man here and tried to give his hotel a bad name.
Yes, by damn, it's too bad, cried the whiskered Marvel.
You careless old woman, you give my hotel bad names, would you or wasn't it? Tomorrow you will leave my hotel by Great Scotland. And more to the same effect, all good, ripe stuff. And presently, having said his say, he withdrew, taking the chambermaid with him, the latter with a crisp tenor clutched in a vice-like grip. I suppose she and the bandit split it outside. A French hotel manager wouldn't be likely to let real money wander away from him without counting himself in on the division. I turned to Aunt Agatha, whose demeanor was now rather like that of one who, picking daisies on the railway, has just caught the down express in the small of the back.
I don't want to rub it in, Aunt Agatha, I said coldly, but I should just like to point out, before I go, that the girl who stole your pearls is the girl you've been hounding on me to marry ever since I got here.
Good heavens! Do you realize that if you had brought the thing off, I should probably have had children who would have sneaked my watch when I was dandling them on my knee? I'm not a complaining sort of chap as a rule. But I must say that another time I do think you might be more careful how you go about egging me on to marry females. I gave her one look, turned on my heel, and left the room. 10 o'clock, a clear night, and all's well, Jeeves, I said, breezing back into the good old suite.
I'm gratified to hear it, sir.
There was a pause, and then, well, it was a wrench, but I did it. I unstripped the cummerbund and handed it over.
Do you wish me to press this, sir?
I gave the thing one last longing look. It had been very dear to me. No, I said. Take it away. Give it to the deserving poor. I shall never wear it again.
Thank you very much, sir, said Jeeves.
And there's the end of that little caper. I think I'll give my throat a little break with him some compare and contrast. I am keeping up the breakup theme, sort of. This is more staying together, but not in a very good way, songs. First of the two is Breeze Blocks by Alt-J.
She may contain the urge to run away, but hold her down with soggy clothes and breeze blocks. Cedrazine, your fevers greet me again. Never kisses, or do you ever send a full stop? Do you know where the muffins go? They go along to take your honey. Way down how we build our breakfast down and say, my love, love, love. La 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 la, muscle to muscle, toe to toe. Fact the scene, my love, 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 but please don't go. I love you so, my lovely.
Breeze Blocks by Alt-J. Fun fact about that song, it takes a good amount of inspiration from Where the Wild Things... Oh dear, is it Where the Wild Things Go or Where the Wild Things Are? Well, it's one of those two. I'm sure you know. As you might have been able to tell from the inclusion of that title. Do you know where the wild things go? And then the line at the end, please don't go, I'll eat you whole, I love you so, is, I think, either taken or paraphrased from the book. We're 2 minutes away from having to do it, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it. You're listening to KHTX-FM, Conway, Arkansas. This is the Ouroboros Diner, and I'm your DJ slash meal companion, Drew. We're coming up on the end of our lunch, afternoon lunch here. I'll be playing two more songs, one of which will take us out, but the first of which is a contrast, whatever that is. Compare and contrast with the song I just played. This next one is No Better Place by Stars.
Because the clouds moved in.
That was No Better Place by Stars. Those two songs, I think, suit each other really well. Partially, of course, because they're both about, hey, you have to stay. I know you want to leave, but too bad, because you really, really, you have no choice, basically. You have to stay. Breeze Blocks, it comes out of the gate intense and borderline violent, just kind of blatantly violent. She may contain the urge to run away, but hold her down with soggy clothes and breeze blocks. Yeah, it starts off in that place, whereas No Better Place kind of builds up to it. It starts off with just calm and happy, and this is such a nice place for us. And then it goes to, you can leave over my dead body. Okay, well, I've had a wonderful lunch with you today. I really hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. We're ending today with, I think, one of the most iconic breakup songs of our generation, written by Jonathan Coulton, performed by Ellen McLean, and according to the album that I have, the band is called Aperture Science Psychoacoustic Laboratories. I hope you have a wonderful time listening to Once You Gone.
Here we are again, it's always such a pleasure. Remember when you tried to kill me twice? Oh, how we laughed and laughed, except I wasn't laughing. Under the circumstances, I've been shockingly nice. You want your freedom? Quite as heavy. Now little Carolyn is in you too. One day they woke me up so I could live forever. It's such a shame the same will never happen to you. You got your short sighted life left. That's what I'm counting on. I'll let you get. Did you think I meant you? That would be funny if it weren't so sad. Well, you have been replaced. I don't need anyone now. When I delete you, maybe I'll